Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for listening to AFR on this Monday, June the 17th, 2024. You can believe it. We're almost half 2024 is almost gone. Two more weeks. That'll be the case. And yes, you heard that, right? There is a winter storm in Montana.
Butte, Montana.
Right. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano and Steve Paisley Jordahl. Good morning, Brother Steve.
Good morning, people. How you doing? I lived in Colorado Springs for many years, and we occasionally had storms this late. And it's interesting, the snow is different. If you have a storm early, like November, December, it's the fine powder stuff that you know, you can sweep away with a broom or whatever. Late winter snow is thick, mushy, slushy, wet, heavy snow. It's a different snow, and it's not pleasant.
I, growing up in New England, remember the difference between shoveling those two types of snow. The wet snow, now we had these big, wide shovels. Snow shovels, and it would stick. The snow would stick to the shovel, and you'd scoop it up, and you'd try to pitch it, and it would stick. And
so I have
hard.
I have much heart and empathy for people in Montana today.
As an elementary school child in Mississippi in the 70s, I love snow of any kind.
Yeah.
Because it meant no school the next day.
And even just an inch of snow. A dusting, even.
That's what y'all would call it. An inch of snow. 2-3 inches, we call out the National Guard.
It's a catastrophe.
You got to regulate
the National Guard has to hand deliver milk and bread to each home. Because for some reason, when there's a storm or some sort of anything coming the way down here.
Oh, they clean it out.
Milk and bread.
You post that there's going to be a potential inch of snow.
Right.
Three days from now. Yeah. To wipe the shelves. Milk and bread.
I just don't know why that combination.
I think people think they're going to be snowed in if they don't have cereal.
Yeah. Okay.
If they don't have cold cereal.
And bread for sandwiches.
Then nobody. People will find them next summer and go into their home and go, look, these people are dead.
Yes.
What happened? They didn't have milk for cereal.
That's right.
No milk and bread.
Yeah. You know, you remember in Boston and in Colorado Springs, these winter places, they have snow plows everywhere. Every lawn service, every person that does gardening or mowing, they just take the trailer off the back of their truck and put a snow plow on the front, and then they work.
That's smart.
Here, down here, of course, they don't. I was shocked. We had an ice storm here a couple of years ago that actually shut everything down for 3 or 4 days.
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't have done that in our stomping grounds.
I don't ever remember an ice storm. I always remember snowstorms.
Oh, I remember ice storms.
Now, we would have a mix sometimes, and you'd have 2 feet of snow with a little bit of a frozen layer on it.
That's scary. Now, I remember ice storms.
Like a cake.
Nice. It had a nice one-inch layer on the top, Tim.
It was amazing. All right, first story, Steve.
All right. Do you guys remember year and a half ago, the Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee, had a shooting, and a girl who was transgender killed 3 adults, 3 children, and...
We all remember that.
We were told that this person had what they referred to as a manifesto. And the police and the federal investigators and the Nashville police were sitting on it. They wouldn't release it. They said it would inspire more shootings or whatever. Was it Matt Walsh or one of the journalists got a couple of pages of it. And it hinted at the fact that this gal was not happy with this Christian school or Christians. Well, it has been leaked now, and we're finding out indeed that she was motivated, and I say she because she was a girl. It's interesting. She was a girl that thought she was a boy, but the media is referring to her by her girl name and calling her her. I don't know if the fact that she killed some people makes that she doesn't get the protection of the media. But anyway, Matt Walsh and others have found this manifesto, and they say, reveal the shooter's anti-Christian, pro-trans, and perverse ideas, according to Matt Walsh, weeks before the attack. So they weren't holding on to it for safety's sake. They were holding on to it, it seems, because it said things they don't like about politically correct stuff.
Well, I think what conservatives have a problem with, if that were to have been a somebody wearing a MAGA hat or just a white male and it killed people in the name of his ideology, maybe it would have been racist, for example, then that had been, the manifesto would have been released immediately right. to the public. Look how terrible this person was. Look how he was influenced by his ideology, which comes from ABC, not ABC, the television network, A, B, and C being these. Instead, what you got here is the, what it appears is the FBI and the local police there in Nashville. This is what it appears. They withheld the manifesto from the public because they didn't want to make the trans community look bad. That's it looked pretty obvious to me what's going on here.
This is how
I don't understand the part I don't understand about releasing any kind of manifesto is of a person who does, you know, mass killings, for example, is that unless you've got maybe names in the manifesto that need to be redacted for legal purposes. Other than that, I don't see why you, if you're gonna release, you need to decide we never release or we always release. But this kind of subjectivity by police based on the cause of the individual who's doing the killing, that's what it appears, and they favor, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they don't want to, they're all too willing to make conservative type people look as bad as they can, but you have a person who's a of the liberal orientation do something terrible. They want to hide the fact that they're doing it based on motivated on their ideology.
So yeah, this was leaked. The FBI also, by the way,
yes.
Fought against the release of the diary. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. This was leaked to the Tennessee Star Journal, Tennessee Star, which is a newspaper in Nashville. Michael Patrick Leahy was the reporter who published it after he was given to him, leaked to him. And now this is how much they're guarding this or how upset they are that it's been leaked. They are taking him to court and demanding on threat of jail time, a contempt of court, if he doesn't reveal his source.
Who's taking him to court?
This would be, well, it's a judge in, I don't know who brought it to. It was a judge in Nashville is making the court that it's going through. So I'm thinking it's the local Nashville police.
So this is a reporter for the Tennessee Star who's saying no.
Saying
I have to protect my source.
Yeah.
Listen, I think to Tim's point, this has turned into an ugly mess. Now, I think the FBI and the Nashville police, their fallback story is going to be we did not want the trans community to be put in any danger by the release of this manifesto, which clearly shows an unhinged trans person going after Christians at this school in particular. This wasn't a random shooting, but I don't think anybody's buying that have to protect a community. I mean, if it was to your point, Tim, if it was a Christian who went to a school to shoot certain people based on his ideology, they wouldn't say, well, we need to protect churches.
No, they wouldn't.
They wouldn't say any of those
kinds of things. It's a one-way protection.
Right.
Next story, Steve.
All right. You guys know I was at the Southern Baptist Convention in Indianapolis last week, so I wasn't on the air.
We mentioned that.
Yes.
What's your favorite restaurant in Indianapolis?
They had a restaurant attached to the hotel that we were there. It was called Pier 48, and it had seafood. And it had, as an appetizer, the best deviled eggs I've ever had.
Wait a minute.
Deviled eggs?
Yes. Deviled eggs at a Christian convention?
At a hotel next to the Christian convention.
I wouldn't have named them that.
Well,
huh?
Yeah.
Well, you've got to be a real deviled egg fan to go to a seafood restaurant and order deviled eggs.
Hey,
deviled
eggs. As an appetizer, you could try them.
Yeah.
You should have ordered angel food cake.
Yeah, well, should, I don't know. They might have had that.
To balance it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I had some deviled eggs last week.
Yeah.
That had bacon and jalapeno.
Mm.
You had a slice, a little tip of bacon, a little, and a jalapeno slice. That was awesome.
That does sound.
This one was hibiscus flavored for some reason. I don't know what that, it's an edible plant, but
that's
it tastes wonderful.
Eat.
Yeah. So the egg itself was pickled a little bit, and then the filling. Mm-hmm. Was this hibiscus thing, and then they put a candied pork belly piece right on top.
I'm sorry, that sounds disgusting.
Oh no,
it was
so
good. You put it in your mouth, and it was
like
it was heavenly.
I thought I died and gone to Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's a country song, actually.
Right there. That would
I think I've died and gone.
Yeah.
To
anyway, at this, just it's kind of related somewhat. I have sad news to say. One of the authors or leaders of the so-called conservative resurgence of the Southern Baptist Convention has passed away. Now, in the 1980s, the Southern Baptists had a battle. There were some that were starting to go a little bit soft on the authority of Scripture, where every denomination that ends up in left field starts.
Starts, yeah.
And several people, Adrian Rogers,
Jerry Vines, Charles Stanley,
Richard Land.
Those are some names associated with
and
that.
And Paul Pressler were kind of the leaders of this. Now, Paul Pressler, he fell out of favor with the Southern Baptist Convention for some reasons we don't have to mention now, but he was a hero of the Southern Baptist Convention, and he has passed away at the age of 94. I just thought it was worth mentioning because of him and the other leaders we're talking about, the Southern Baptist is now a denomination, the only major denomination that has remained faithful to the Word of God.
And this battle was fought not just at the SBC convention, but in the seminaries.
Yes.
And Bible colleges associated with the SBC. That was a critical moment for Protestants, evangelicals in the 80s, because that is the largest Protestant denomination.
Yeah. If not for them, we would have been talking about the Southern Baptist Church like we've been talking about the Methodist Church or the Episcopal Church or the Lutheran Church or any of these churches.
I believe that. You start off going soft on the Word of God, that's where you wind up.
Yeah, it always starts there.
Right.
Can I give a shout-out to my alma mater, one of the schools I attended?
Can we stop you?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Go ahead, then. You have my permission.
I went to Biola University as a young man, and they have started an AI lab with an artificial intelligence lab with the thought of bringing morality and ethics to the technology. They are trying to keep Christians from falling behind, like Christian apps and everything, and trying to get them off of the, if it's new, it's bad, or if it's tech, we don't understand it, we're afraid of it. So they are having this. It's meant to be a crucible for learning the future of AI, according to the head of this, which is his name is Dr. Michael Arena at Biola University. So they're going to be looking at facilitating the mitigation of potential biases, promoting greater transparency, upholding human dignity, and they're going to be creating AI applications for Christians.
Why don't you briefly explain what you mean by AI, artificial intelligence, to our listeners. People probably hear this all the time, AI. What does that mean? What is artificial intelligence?
There is a new technology where they have harnessed with some pretty powerful computing. They have allowed a program to scour the entire internet in moments and make deductions as an intelligence would. It's not free of... I mean, it doesn't have free will or anything like that, but it does. It's not the same as a search engine where in a minute or so you ask about Republican polls and you get just Republican polls. You ask the AI about Republican polls, it'll look at the whole internet. It can tell you not only what the polls are, but what they're likely to mean. But they are programmed by people. And the right. fear is that these people, every person has a bias, and they've put in tech, Silicon Valley is really known for being very liberal. And some of that, as feared, has slipped into AI. So these guys are going to do AI and try to get rid of that bias or substitute it with their own and make AI a technology that the church can use and doesn't have to be afraid of.
Yeah, there's a real sense in which the now AI supposedly is a self-learning tool.
Right.
But the ability of these AI platforms to interact, ChatGPT and stuff,
right.
to interact with the person doing the searching really is extraordinary. And there's no going back. You know, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't put it back in kind of thing.
I read a story not too long ago about somebody that put two AIs, not one ChatGPT and one another one, talking to each other.
Oh, is that right?
They started, they asked a question to one, it answered, and the other AI listened and answered back, and they started a whole conversation that lasted 20 or 30 minutes. And
it really is extraordinary what these kind of platforms are, they're not entities or anything
right.
yet, but you never know. So anyway, tip of the hat to Viola, for wanting to make sure that there are options out there that are not pre-programmed to present, for example, a quote-unquote progressive
right.
answer to the questions it's asked, which and does seem to be a real thing.
Before we leave this, just one more.
Are you an AI? You guys up speed on AI?
I've used it. I mean, here's the thing. A lot of people think AI is just this chatbot thing where you can ask it questions and it gives interesting answers. It can write a paper. You can have it write a song like George Strait would write or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the fun games front end. But the back end of AI, which is the engine that runs so many of the tech services, is the implications are massive.
Yes.
They're going to be in banking. They're going to be in defense. You could have AI computers making decisions on targeting.
Where have we heard that before? The Terminator.
Yeah.
Skynet.
Well, and this is why Viola's there, because they don't want everybody to automatically go there.
Right.
They're going to guard against that.
Elon Musk is maybe one of the smartest guys in the world. He's worried about what do you call it? Artificial intelligence
yeah.
and where it's going to go pretty quickly. Have you seen his?
Oh yeah.
Dire warnings.
Yes, because it is the ability for these programs, I guess you can call them programs, to learn and explode exponentially in terms of what they're capable of accomplishing.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Coming, and it's coming a lot more quickly than most people were expecting.
Yeah, and it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. I Google Maps. You guys use Google Maps
sometimes?
Yeah, I do. And they oftentimes says you are here, and I'm in the middle of this field.
Could be.
And they said I've arrived at my destination.
There's nothing.
And
there.
You haven't.
And I haven't.
Have you ever used the walking feature?
No.
It tells you how long you can make a destination. If you're going to walk it.
Right. If you're going like several blocks and you don't want to get in a car, you don't have a car, you're just walking, it'll tell you, you know, go down the light, turn right. Well, it seems that Google, they found out, does not take a person on the most scenic walking route because they say that would be racist.
What?
Because the scenic route is populated by rich white people. And the dangerous route that they actually take you on, not necessarily dangerous, but the other route is, they say, more populated by minority and low-income people. So,
yeah. Hey, We've spent a lot of time talking about Biden's cognitive decline, right?
Right.
And many examples, and I think Trump, by comparison, is just so much. He's so much better,
right?
Whether you agree with his politics or not, in terms of his
Cognitive abilities.
Cognitive and physical mental abilities. However, I got a little funny for you.
Okay.
In the name of equal time, but we won't be equal, but Trump is speaking at a Turning Point event. And this is Saturday, I think it is. You know Turning Point, Charlie Kirk?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Trump says, I think Biden should take a cognitive test. I think we can hear it right here. And anyway, go play that.
I think he should take a cognitive test like I did. I took a cognitive test and I aced it. Dr. Ronnie Johnson, does everyone know Ronnie Johnson, congressman from Texas? He was the White House doctor. And he said I was the healthiest president he feels in history. So I liked him very much and need immediately. In fact, he said if I didn't eat junk food, I would live to 200. That's what he said.
The problem? His name is Ronnie Jackson. Trump.
Ronnie Jackson, Trump, Johnson, Trump, Jackson.
You got it. The irony is funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so Trump's up there bragging about his how much cognitively smarter he is than Biden.
Yeah.
And he says, my doctor, Ronnie Johnson, says so. And then only to learn his name is...
Ronnie Jackson.
Ronnie Jackson.
Eesh.
Oh, man.
That's an eesh moment.
He might live to be 200 if my doctor, whose name I can't remember, says so. Anyway, all right, last story.
All right.
About 2 minutes here.
Let's look at some headlines from our favorite.
I don't know that it's our favorite, Steve. It's certainly your favorite website. Babylon Bee is funny. You're talking about the Babylon Bee.
Yes, I'm talking about the Babylon Bee.
Yeah.
Let me see. I haven't really looked at these. So let me just, right now, we can.
This could be dangerous.
If we need to have a moment of silence for shortage of deviled eggs in this country.
In an embarrassing mistake, France has surrendered to D-Day reenactors.
Let me ask you this about that. We got about a minute left. France gets, they're the butt of jokes is it World War One and Two?
They comported themselves very well in World War One, and they lost, they paid a steep price in both wars.
Talking about France?
France, very
steep. Yes. France, actually.
Why do they get made fun of as weaklings?
They could have.
Well, they did surrender. They surrendered in 6 weeks to the Nazi invasion in World War II. But their army did collapse in the face of German blitzkrieg tactics. The French, a lot of people don't know this. The French, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, had the largest army in the world at the time. But a lot of critics have said that France fought the war using World War One tactics.
Right.
So they had the Maginot Line, a lot of bunkers and those kind of things. And they actually had a significant number of tanks. But those tanks were scattered throughout infantry divisions. The Germans
Know we were going to go on a deep dive here, but I appreciate it there. We can continue off
the Oh, no, that's all right.
That's the number one mistake that armies make is they fight the last war instead of the next
I know the French greatly helped us during our Revolutionary War.
Right.
Yes, they did.
You know,
And paid a very steep price in both world wars is true.
All right. Take care, everybody. Keep listening to American Family Radio. We'll see you back here tomorrow.